This is Rakadix After Hours.
Oh, hello! It is time, of course, for Rack Addicts After Hours with Ben and Pete, the hosts for your music and technology podcast. It is episode 123. 123, how satisfying. I love it. Pete, start us off. What have you been doing the past some days that happened since the last time we sat down here and spoke into microphones?
I have been prepping for a trip of my own. Mm-hmm. Last week, I believe you updated us on your mission that you're going to be doing with your father to Scotland.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, and the various, film is here.
The various sippings of alcohol that you're yep. going to be indulging in and the photographic processes that you're going to carry out when you're there.
Most likely.
I will be also doing some photography on my trip.
Ooh, nice one.
And so I have been contemplating several extra new pieces of equipment for my system or setup.
Right. For those who don't know, what's your normal camera of choice?
I normally shoot with a Canon 6D mm-hmm. Mark II.
Nice.
And a variety of lenses, but I need to add to that variety.
What are you thinking?
Well, firstly, I need to get hold of, just generally anyway, not just for this trip, I do need to get hold of a 50mm 1.2
classic
prime, and I shall be getting one of those shortly. But mm-hmm. I've also been debating about teleconverters.
Is it kind of like a 2x magnification-y type situation?
Yeah,
do
I mean,
they do that?
Typically, a lot of manufacturers will have a 1.4. Mm-hmm. Some manufacturers will even have a 1.7. And they also tend to do a 2x as well.
Right.
But you lose aperture mm-hmm. in the respect of stops.
Yeah.
So you 1.4 will lose you one stop. Mm-hmm. And a 2x will lose you two stops.
Right.
But if you're not too worried about light, if you do have good glass in front of the teleconverter, then that mitigates the sort of loss of aperture and also some of the clarity that you will lose with
the more elements, the less sharpness you have, I suppose.
Well, it's obviously if a 400mm lens is going to be a lot better than a 200mm lens with a ×2 teleconverter.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Although I believe that certainly a Canon do one particular quite a long lens. I can't remember what the focal length was, but it's actually got a teleconverter built in
You switch it in and out.
You sort of switch it in, and it's got, I think, several settings.
Sounds really fancy.
Yes, it was a...
Bet the lens isn't cheap.
Well, the video I was watching, it was a, I want to say, $10,000 lens.
Bargain of the century, maybe not.
But you know what it's like, the really big or really long lenses, decent, really long lenses are not cheap whatsoever. There's no easy fix for that type of thing. So I'm thinking a teleconverter is a much more economical way, and specifically because I want to do some lunar photography.
Ooh, nice. That sounds fun.
Yes, we are destined for full moon around about now or very shortly, certainly when I go away. There's also going to be a blood moon, but
fancy.
We're not going to see it in the UK.
Ah, big sads.
Which would have been also an interesting thing to photograph. Mm. But other than that, I'll be taking my other selection of lenses. There's a couple of shots that I want to grab. In the UK, there are numerous fields that have been sown with oilseed rape.
Ooh, yeah.
Which has a very distinctive yellow flower at this time of year.
And a distinctive effect on all the hay fever sufferers around.
Yes. But I've been long wanting a really good wide-angle shot of a oilseed rape field that is stretching to the horizon, maybe rising up a hill slightly.
Yeah.
With a horizon and in a very vivid blue sky.
Yeah.
It'd be a very sort of
yellow. I can picture it in my head right now.
Sort of a wide-angle shot that's literally yellow on the bottom and blue on the top.
Yeah, nice. Hopefully you find it.
Well, there's going to be plenty of it. We're kind of just, I think, in the tail end of the oilseed rape blossoming season.
Yeah.
Also, again, in the UK, we have numerous bluebell woods, which are very dramatic.
Indeed.
They they also deserve some wide-angle photography performed on them. And where I'm going, which is down towards the south coast, or virtually on the coast, in the Chichester area, and there's going to be plenty of nature of that ilk to be photographed.
Wonderful. Will you let us know if you've got some gems when you get back?
I certainly will, and if they're good enough, I shall post them on the Facebook page for anyone who's interested.
You're hearing that, audience? We exist on social media at RackAddictsUK. Come and find us, please.
The only issue with all this, I mean, we'll be fine with the dates we are, but I heard a report a couple of days ago, and I can't remember the organisation, but it's some sort of university study, and they have worked out that due to global warming, spring in the UK is happening 3 weeks earlier.
Interesting. Doesn't surprise me, really, given how absolutely roasting it was in... Was it February we had that week where it just felt like summer? I can't remember. It's all going wrong.
Yes.
All going sideways very quickly.
Oh, for consistent weather.
Right. Is that your week?
That is my week.
Your week is over with. Well, you mentioned Bluebell Woods. I did go on a nice long bike ride somewhere southwards from where I am. I really don't know where I went, but there were Bluebell Woods. It was delightful. I did get a couple of pictures. And on this particular ride, I also brought the film camera. It was bouncing along on my back, but I did manage to keep it safe and steady. And the film came back, and I still don't have a scanning situation that will get me any real results. So I thought to myself, what do you need? You need a device that captures the thing. Phone, camera.
Is that the one you told us about last week?
No, because I'm still waiting for that, and I have told you about that, and I remember that. And, of course, you need to backlight your film and hold it flat. Now, I didn't manage to hold it flat, but I cobbled something together just to try and see if anything was in focus or kind of what it looked like. And it actually gave me some interesting results. So, I have a picture here from my second film camera, which is a 35mm half frame thing, so you get half a frame in portrait kind of thing, so you double your money on your roll of film. You might recognize these two.
Yes,
there we go. That's your Telmo and his partner on black and white, though, because my white balance didn't work. It looks sepia, which is fine. But what you can see is that the grain isn't film grain. It is, in fact, the RG and B of the pixels on my phone screen, which I just had on a white background and put the film on top of it. And it kind of worked. I can see what's in focus and what isn't.
It almost looks like a old-fashioned tin type.
Yeah, this one you can see even more.
Yeah, it's got that oldie-worldy look to it. Yeah. So were you intending to sort of produce photographs that look like circa 1900?
No, but it's kind of cool. It's not too bad. So I used my partner's camera, and the kit lens that it came with was an 18 to 50-something or 60-something millimeter zoom lens, which feels, oh, it's just the cheapest thing I've ever experienced. But it worked, and it was, I could, you know, manual focus, and the manual focus ring was all wobbly, but it worked. I used that because I just wanted something that could focus as close as possible. So I did manage to, as you can see, get a whole frame pretty much in shot.
That looks like an impressionist painting, a Monet, perhaps.
Yeah, there you go. There's my partner in glorious red, blue, and green pixels on film. It's very confusing.
Why is it so pixely? Is that an aberration of using the various bits that you cobbled together?
Yeah, well, using the phone on producing a white screen as a backlight obviously does that. There are no white pixels on LCD displays. It's just blasting full brightness on all colours. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. And there is one picture will come out quite well.
So what you need is a light box, really.
Yeah, proper light box, which I have ordered and is on the way at some point. But this one I'm quite excited to scan properly. I think that looks quite artsy and interesting. Just a corner of a building on a very nice summer's day. But we'll see how we go. Anyway, that was fun. I did that. What else did I do? I remember. I don't remember at all. That's why I wrote it down, to remind myself. Today, I purchased a board game that I've been waiting for quite a while, called Cascadia. The word Cascadia is about a region in the Pacific Northwest of America, specifically the natural environment around there. It's called a bioregion. Anyway, that's the name of the board game. But you create habitats and populate it with creatures, and you get points for building nice habitats for nice creatures. I will let you know once I've played it, because I've been waiting for it for ages. So there's that. Finally, my father-ino has sort of profited from the Genesis tickets that we bought, or he bought everybody ages ago. He won a, was it NEC Birmingham Superfans Club competition, which got him tickets to, well, a private box tickets for two to either see Cirque du Soleil or Evanescence. And he's away when those shows are. So my partner and I are going to go and see Evanescence in a private box.
Who are, which are?
They are quite an old-ish metal band, female-fronted, kind of operatic-ish vocals, quite sing-alongable, but metal-y stuff involved. Yeah.
Okay.
I think they're quite a big band. Quite big in that corner of the world.
Quite a big band I've never heard of.
Yes, let me get some facts.
Having said that, I've mostly never heard of most current artists because I'm an old fart myself.
So they are formed in 1995, and their big tunes, which most people will know, are Bring Me to Life and My Immortal. What do we got? They have 2 Grammy Awards, 17 million copies of some of their big singles. Yeah, big band. Either way, that's going to be quite cool. That's away in November, though, so it's going to be a while before I can report back. Now, we better stop nattering on about our weeks, because there's a lot of synth news to get through. I've got a lot of tabs open. Do you want to jump in with the big guns, or should we get some of the little ones out of the way first?
Should we get some of the little ones out of the way first?
Just totally.
To build up to it.
Let's start with quite an interesting one. Do you remember the Erica Synth's Syntrax?
Vaguely.
That is the VCS3 alike. Do I mean VCS3? I always get these confused. No, it's the Synthy A alike. Yes, the EMS Synthy A, or AKS. I think KS might just be the keyboard.
Yeah, it's sort of white-coloured. I think it's got the pin matrix on it.
Yeah, digital pin matrix and the joystick. But they have made the Syntrax 2, which is obviously a sequel, but they're adding extra and more exciting bits. Let me tell you what the changes are. Okie doke. They say 2 perfectly stable main oscillators with wave shapers, versatile multimode filter, supercharged external instrument inputs with envelope follower, a unique, great-sounding ring modulator, recordable joystick, and built-in piano roll sequencer around the digital pin matrix, and a DSP effects platform. That's the new version.
So, more expensive.
I can't remember how much the old one was, but this one will be 1,800 great European euros.
That sounds less than the original. I'm sure the original was north of 2,000.
Let's see. Let's find an old article. Let's see.
Possibly,
what we've got.
I'm dreaming that.
2,500. Good memory.
I thought it was. So they've made this one cheaper somehow.
They have. How fascinating. This one is a rather sexy all black.
Okay. Quite interesting.
It does look good.
So it's got all the features of the original one, plus more stuff,
I think,
for less money.
It changed a little bit. So I'm going to quickly pop up a little comparison so we can have a look at these. So on the original one they have 3 not identical oscillators, but it's first one is sine and saw, next one is square and triangle, then it's another square and triangle. On this one, you've got 2 primary oscillators that can be synced with. Third oscillator doesn't have the octave switch, so I presume it's going to be a slightly less featured one. No, noise generator looks the same. Sample and hold looks the same. Yeah, so on the inputs, you've got that envelope follower, which they mentioned there. You've got a mic level option for the second input, which is pretty cool. Yeah, that DSP ring modulator is a completely different design. Trapezoid generator will be the same. I'm interested to see how this piano roll sequencing works. I assume they're doing that on the pin matrix in some way.
So that would be similar to the Arturia route with the Matrix Brute and the Poly Brute, where the matrix also doubles up as the sequencer as well.
Time will tell. I don't know that we've got any video of this yet, so we'll have to see when they decide to release their videos. So that's cool for certain people. I wouldn't mind borrowing one.
Well, it's certainly going to kill the Mark One off very quickly if it is.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not sure if they did it as a limited edition Mark One, or like a sort of only a set run. Anyway, that's a cool one, I think. Very cool indeed. It seems like we've mentioned Create Audio for the past three episodes or something, but they've teamed up once more with Pittsburgh for another little desktop synthesizer called the East Beast.
I saw this and I thought, have we discussed this already? But no.
No, we haven't. So it looks, I haven't checked, Eurorack mountable, but comes in a classic Pittsburgh black box looking thing. You have an oscillator with a fine-tuning glide FM and width control. Interesting. A PGH filter, I assume that's something Pittsburgh related, which has modulation and resonance controls, ADSR envelope volume, there's a basic LFO in there, it's got buttons in the shape of a chromatic keyboard, and your sort of shift functions with the built-in sequencer, a little patch bay for your semi-modular action, and it looks pretty colourful. It's sort of a black, white, blue and green livery. Now, let me check about that. Yes, it is Eurorack mountable. Ooh, and the price is rather friendly too. Pre-ordering at the moment. Street price, $250, euros and pounds.
Doesn't seem too bad. Is that? It's a whole voice.
Whole voice, indeed. Let's see if there are any hidden features.
And being sold under the Create Audio banner rather than Pittsburgh.
Indeed. Pittsburgh Modular Synthesizer developed 100% analog oscillator. So I assume it's similar to that function generator we mentioned last episode where Create Audio went, here's the brief, do the thing. Which is cool. I have no problem with that at all. We like Pittsburgh. So, what are the extra bits? Fully MIDI-able, fully patchable, which I assume means there isn't anything unavailable on patch points. 32 steps of sequencer with 13 presets. A generative sequencing mode, that's fun. Arpeggiation. Ah, the width control in the oscillator is just PWM. It's nothing exciting. There's a digital multi-modulation tool in there, which is CV... Yeah, you can control it with CV, and it does random, an extra LFO, or an envelope generator. Built-in clock divider. Yeah, sounds cool to me. Okay, tell you what, let's just rattle through all of the Eurorack modules, because there's a lot. And then we'll do the big boy, and then some desktop-shaped stuff. How does that sound?
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. 4MS. We do like 4MS. We have five things. So, what are they? A mini-peg. That's pingable envelope generator, which you can cycle and clock divide. That's quite a classic module of theirs, actually, the big one. So there's a half-size one of those. That looks to be 6 HP-ish. You've also got the shuffling clock multiplier in there, which I wonder how different these are to the old ones. They're certainly black panels, which is new. Ah, okay, mini-peg is actually 8 HP. Ah, gotcha. So it's the shuffling clock multiplier with the built-in breakout all in one panel. I don't know that they were DIY only before, but you could certainly get those as kits, which were quite popular.
Yeah, I built one of them. I can't it's one of the clock multipliers.
Very useful, those.
With the breakout switches.
Gotcha.
Not great kits to build.
No? Why?
I just didn't like the design. I mean, maybe they were doing it to try and save space, but they would do that thing with through hole. I don't know if you've seen it, where they'll have the resistor going through the hole one side, and then they have it vertically and then loop the actual other side back down, rather than having the resistor laying flush on the circuit board.
It's really awful if you do make a mistake and you have to go in and desolder something. I think the Zlob Unicursal VCA that I did, 6-channel VCA, was like that. Thankfully, I didn't get anything wrong, but it really looks awful once it's done, just a forest of nothing perfectly lined up.
Yeah.
Because if you get them all flat and lined up, it looks super satisfying, doesn't it?
Yeah, I just wasn't that impressed with the physical design of how they laid out the components and so forth. But that's another story.
Three more, which is the ENV VCA series. There is an 8 HP envelope with a VCA in it, and then there is a dual envelope VCA in 16 HP, and then there is a dual shaped envelope VCA. So this guy has more control in terms of your linear logarithmic type curves and more CV control and wave shapey stuff, all sorts. If you really want lots of envelopey goodness, dual shaped envelope VCA. But yeah, go and check them out. Ooh, we've got some audio for you here. Are you ready to hear some sounds? I'll tell you what they are in a moment. Sounds. Listen to the kick drum. That was the sound of the Nobular Kickane. Ooh, how did I get a plosive on a K? Kickane. Nobular are, of course, the people behind that
polycinematic.
That's the boyo. So this is the same slightly odd livery of black, white, a sort of bluish, and a weird pink. Which, I mean, it's distinctive, certainly. But this badly boy is a 909-inspired virtual analog bass drum circuit engine with features. Interestingly, there's a reverb in there, not sure why you'd want it, and also, where did I see this? A stereo spectral compressor, which is kind of neat. Let me show you the controls. There is a trigger button in the middle. You have a sidechain control, that's why there's a compressor in there. A attack and decay control. There's, of course, tuning, drive, level, click, punch, bend, and the reverb. There is also a bass cut switch, which I think is really cool, off 40 hertz and 60 hertz, depending on how much mix you're doing, because, of course, you could get a bit soggy down in the low end if you've got too much going on. And yes, it seems, because you've got a stereo input and output on this one, yeah, you can use that built-in sidechain to pass most or all of your mix through it and just easily have your kick doing the ducking. That's really smart. I like it. I like it indeed.
Yes. Have we got a price for it?
Let's find out. Let's find out. 267 Squiddly Boys. Could be worse. Of course, it is DSP back there.
Yes. It's got a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not particularly averse to non-analog kicks, as long as it sounds good. And it does look like there's a lot of flexibility to it, so you can really hone your kick.
Indeed. I want to know more about how the reverb happens in here.
Or why the reverb happens in
here. Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, you can put reverb on a kick drum for 80s reasons, but most of the time I would say not the smartest idea. Yeah, it appears to be reverb for the kick. That is an odd idea, but
maybe
it's there.
Maybe if you've got a kick with a really short sustain and release.
Mm.
So it's a very fast attack and a very short sound.
Yeah, well, is it Blue Monday, the new order with the kick drum pat thing at the beginning, you know, the one?
Yes,
there's reverb on that. Maybe if you're going for that kind of vibe with your kick drum. Anyway, the options there, Nobula, doing some interesting stuff. I'm excited to see what they do next, because I think that's just the two modules that they've got so far.
I am still quite keen on getting my hands on a polycinematic.
Was it 8 voices?
I can't remember.
I'm gonna have to Google that, because it is a great one.
Again, it's digital.
It is 8 voices, yeah. 320 quid, that's delish. Right, we've got so much to do, I've got to keep moving on. Dopefer! They have a stereo multimode filter in 2 colours, of course. Let's see what the cool stuff is about this one. You can use it in stereo or parallel or dual mono if you like. You've got, interestingly, it's the same filter as in the Dark Energy 2 and 3.
Those are the ones they had to build after they couldn't get the chips that they utilised in the original Dark Energy 1.
Indeed. Aha. A filter spread functionality, which is labelled as frequency difference or delta F. That's capital delta, the triangle. Kind of cool stuff. Let's find a price on that if we can. Oh, yep, here we go. €260. Not terrible. We've then also got a quad attenuator and an inverter as well. Kind of utilitarian. But good stuff, because it's Dopefer and it will work and it'll be affordable. €100 and then €70, respectively, for those last two. Another one where I can give you some audio. Listen to this. That is the sound of the Look Mum No Computer Cosmo 1222 Performance VCO. So, this is an oscillator that he made for his large format Boyo 5U system. He's called it the Cosmo format, but it's now in Eurorack size. It's pretty cool. Fully built, and I think kits might be planned at some point. It is a 3340 chip that lots of people will be familiar with. And because it's Look Mum No Computer, expect dirtiness. And it looks kind of vibey as well.
I did see a picture of the front faceplate, and it had a bit of a make noise vibe about the writing.
Yeah, in the writing, definitely. It's all those super sharp angles, and it's quite thin and scratchy looking, but it's a vibe. There's a little display on there, which, is that a tuner? I'm not sure. There is a 7-segment display in the top right, and it also says tune above it, and it has kind of a left and right and two red LEDs and a green one in the middle, much like simple guitar tuners might. So some tuning help in there potentially, which would be quite cool. The tune control is in fact plus or minus a whole octave, which is a good way of doing things, I think. Anyway, there's that one. It'll be out eventually. And there was a price. I saw a price. Where did the price go? £229. There we go. Right, we're nearly there. We're nearly done with the Eurorack stuff. Finally, we have 5 new releases from our favourites. Well, maybe not our favourites, but some people that we like very much. Chaos Devices. And the first is finally named after a city that we vaguely have a connection to. It is Sofia.
Yes.
Woo-hey! This one is a transcendent waveform analog oscillator. It's a big boy.
Oh, it is.
There we are. So, an analog boyo. We have 2 halves of it, it seems, in some way. Octave selector up top, the chicken head style clicky boy that goes into LFO mode, and a big old pitch control in the middle. Then it gets a bit more confusing. We've got, on the left and the right, ratio A and ratio B, as well as warp A and warp B, and then element A and element B. The element things are 3-way switches, two-way switches, between sine and square, and yeah, I don't know. Let me read you the thing, because I have no idea. We don't have sound yet. I'm sure we will during/after Superbooth. Here we go. Sofia is an unusual analog oscillator based on an original waveforming principle. The sound is a mixture of a warm, saturated bass tone and 2 modulating ripple elements. A wide array of control inputs coupled with separate outputs for numerous components of the sound shaping chain allows for extensive self-patching and complex animation of the final waveform. The resulting range of possible sounds is surprisingly vast, including but not limited to vowel-like, tearing hard sync effect, woody pings, warm and fuzzy sine-like evolving tones with a touch of bright sparkle on top. Interesting. I want to hear it, but we'll find out eventually. So next we have Kostzalin. K-O-S-Z-A-L-I-N, maybe. I don't know. This is a stereo voltage-controlled frequency shifter, which apparently offers quasi-exponential and linear frequency change of up to plus or minus 5 kilohertz, as well as full stereo feedback, all voltage controlled. I've never messed around with frequency shifting outside of a DAW, so I've no idea how it might work. My thought is, if it's DSP, latency. It'll either have loads of latency or sound kind of weird. Can you have analog frequency shifters? I'm sure you can. I know nothing. I'm excited to see how this one sounds as well. Let's move on to the next one. I think these 2, which are additions to the Leibniz subsystem, which I will not try and explain. I suggest you go and watch the Heinbach video on it, because he made some cool sounds. These are all binary, digitally stuff. They form a system of modules designed to do some very strange things that I don't understand. There is Gera, or Gera, G-E-R-A, which allows masking individual bits of the digital data. Cool. I don't know how that works in a patch. You then have Potsdam, maybe, which is a binary data routing system. I don't know. I assume these will be very exciting for people that are already invested in the Leibniz subsystem. Anyway, the final one is a compact signal summator called SOPOT, and you've got 3 sections, Mix L, Mix M, and Mix R, which just let you add stereo and mono signals together relatively easily. And instead of having pots for volume control, you have a 50 and 100% switch, which is kind of interesting. There we go. That's the Eurorack stuff done. Now, for the juicy and expensive one. Pete, what is it?
This is the big one. This is the one that, I've certainly known about this officially for some time, but
nice one.
It's been under embargo. In fact, as we speak, it is 6:05.
Oh, when it supposedly lifts.
In the PM.
Gotcha.
So I think it's 6 p.m. UK time, so I don't know what US time that is, and it will be officially announced. So we're kind of slightly ahead of the curve, although there's been rumours for weeks.
Yes, I did have it on my notes, didn't read it, but it was leaked on certain places.
So, Tom Oberheim is releasing a OBX-8.
Mm-hmm, it looks juicy and retro.
Yes, so it is a re-release, as they say, of the classic 1979 instruments with updates, the usual sort of thing, MIDI, USB, etc., etc. And in the vein of the sequential re-releases, it has a vintage knob.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
But the elephant in the room is the price. It is 5,000 big ones.
5,000! And that's dollars, so it will be £5,000.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, 5,000 euros. 5,000. So, in the tradition of these kind of re-releases that we've had over the last, what do you want to say, about 5 years or so?
Yeah.
We've had a sort of plethora of genuine releases from the original manufacturers. This goes into that column, so to speak.
Indeed.
So, the people who are into buying these will all buy one initially, and then...
The same people that bought the Prophet 5, I assume.
Yeah, or the Prophet 10, depending on how they're feeling about it, and the Model D Moog re-release, and the lucky ones that got hold of an ARP 2600,
the full-size
one that was released 2 years ago.
Oh, man, is it really that long ago?
Yeah.
Wow, time flies.
And obviously, Korg have re-released the full-size MS-20 on several occasions, to be honest. I'm trying to think of any others. Korg also did the ARP Odyssey full-size as well.
They did. Is that the one that came with a suitcase?
No, that was the one with the small keys.
The little one.
The little one. But yeah, you could assemble yourself quite a collection of classic but modern synths in this respect, if you've got... Very deep pockets.
This one actually comes with the full set of original factory sounds for the OBX, OBSX, OBXA, and OB8. So it's kind of all of those rolled into one glorious £5,000 big boy. Real walnut end cheeks, though, so you get your money's worth.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit too much fixation on wood on some of these, especially the Prophet 5 and the Prophet 10.
Mm.
I mean, if you are spending that much money, you are going to be relatively concerned about it, how it looks aesthetically. But we've had instruments sent back because they didn't like the pattern and the grain of the wood.
Wasn't there a guy that asked for a bunch of B-stock prologs to check which had the nicest grain or something?
Yeah.
Unless you're listening, that was a very sensible decision for you to make. Okay, so you've got two oscillators per voice, and you can do unison modes, of course, up to 8 voices, a juicy 16 unison should you so choose, 600 presets per voice, pan noise levels, the vintage knob that Pete mentioned. Yeah, I imagine first batch will be pre-ordered out, and then they'll be selling very slowly.
So I'm not quite sure how these have been fabricated, whether it's with the help of Sequential, as it's all part of the Focusrite family, or they have other factories that can be utilized for putting these together.
Who really knows? Either way, it's another big one, and we shall see what people say when they have them.
I'm not surprised that this has come out. I mean, there were indications, I believe, was it last year that Tom trademarked his name with the threat of Behringer likely to bring... In fact, they are obviously got a couple of products. Yeah. They've got the little Skift size 8-voice thing, but they've also got a full-size one as well.
Oh, I didn't realise they were... Oh, well, of course they were.
I say full-size, it's DeepMind 12 size, but effectively it's pretty much this type of thing. I mean, obviously this will be nicer, but substantially more expensive by a...
Indeed.
Quite a factor. I would imagine the Behringer incarnation is going to be, what, 700-800 max?
Yeah, definitely less than a fifth of the price of that one.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm sure we'll get one in the store at some point and I'll get to play on it, but as nice as it is, I'm not feeling particularly the urge to rush out and buy one of these. I'm quite happy with my OB6.
Yeah, I'll wait to see how it stacks up against the Prophet 5 in Pete's initial impressions when you do get one in the shop, because the Prophet 5 and you aren't great friends.
I don't mind it, but I still think the Prophet 6 is a much better option. Mm. And even Dave Smith has been heard on occasion saying, get a Prophet 6.
Yeah.
I still maintain, to a degree, obviously they're not quite the same thing, that the Prophet 6 is 40 years of development over the Prophet 5. Yeah. So why would you get Prophet 5 unless it is a pure nostalgia thing? It's effectively a mono synth. Having said that, most synths are actually mono, and it's not until you get to the effects chain that you get the stereo.
Yeah.
But to really make it sing, you're going to have to stick it in through quite a few nice effects to get it to really sound gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a Marmite, I find.
Mm.
We have some customers that come in and go, oh, I absolutely love it. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. But, you know, maybe they're just overawed by the
It does have
status.
Gravitas, doesn't it? I can't stand, personally, just plugging in my headphones to a synth with no effects and just because I always try and find the initialize combination, and then you end up blasted with some raw sawtooth into the ears. That never does anything. It's first filter, reverb, and then I'll start playing. That's how I'll begin. And you can't add reverb on a Prophet 5.
Yes.
On its own, anyway.
Anyway, I'll be interested to see how these shift. We will have an initial interest, I'm sure. But again, this is a synth for the very few with the substantially deep pockets that can cope with this type of purchase.
Very much so. And speaking of the genuine article, a tenuous link there, but Roland are doing some strange things once again. So they have released a sort of Juno-ish thing, a sort of 808-ish thing, and a vocal effects processor-ish thing in very much Volca-ish shells. Around the 200 squids mark, you've got, these are all digital of course because it is Roland, a Juno 6, an 808, TR-808 type thing, and a VT4 voice transformer. So here's what I want to know. Is the Juno more voices than the Boutique? Because this is the thing that confused me, is Roland already has the Boutique series, which is a very much overlapping products now. So why would you go for one over the other?
I seem to recall that they're only four voice.
Yes, you're right. They've done it again. Why?
It could be exactly the same sound engine, just repackaged in a different...
It probably is. And speaking of a different shape, the Juno one looks really ropey. So, all plastic enclosure, of course, and it's got what look to be those horrible gummy buttons on the front, and a lot of them are shaped in a chromatic keyboard, which would be miserable to play. Just confused.
I think they saw what Korg had been doing with the Volcas.
And it took them... 4 years or more to catch on.
Yeah.
What?
It seems to me with Roland that they just look for new ways to repackage their own sound set, and we've said this before.
Well, yeah, because that's exactly what they did with the Juno X, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Ugh. Anyway, we like poking fun at Roland because they're just weird. Okay, other things from brands we prefer. Korg have another NTS something. This is the NTS2, they call it, a Studio Swiss Army knife that ships with a semi-modular synth book, which is kind of cool. The book is done by, I think, the same people that do Patch and Tweak, which is pretty cool. But this is a two-channel oscilloscope with a screen in the same size as the other thing, the NTS1. An interesting idea, and you kind of build it yourself, in inverted commas. You just stick the two halves together, pretty much. Yeah, it's a weird idea. I certainly like oscilloscopes myself. Ooh, I lied. It's actually a four-channel oscilloscope. That's really cool. Or dual stereo, so you can have a look at your signals. I think a lot of modular people would really like to have this around, because Eurorack sort of integrated ones, like there's one from vpme.de, or there's the Mordax Data, they're kind of pricey.
Or well, the Jones Plus, which is
the O-Tool and those ones. Yeah, so this could be a nice low cost one. Obviously it won't be in the rack, but if it's going to be USB powered, so super handy.
Yeah, I fancy getting a Mordax Data one. They seem to have come down in price somewhat. So I can see myself getting a black faced one into maybe the new Scarab case that I'm building.
Ooh, nice. You can also output stuff from this oscilloscope. You've got a real-time spectrum analyzer, which is an interesting choice, but that's cool. A dual waveform generator, which is nice. You can do sine square, triangle, sawtooth, pulse and square. I wonder how they differentiate them. And noise, which is neat. So you can use those as control voltage sources or even envelopes if you can one-shot them. That is cool. Nice. Have we got a price anywhere? No, early summer, that's when we'll see it. But that's really cool. A cool, neat little thing. The final one. The final one is another weird thing. Listen to this. So yeah, that was weird. And you know why it's weird? Because it's a Soma Labs machine. And I think you should go and watch the video that I just played to you on YouTube. Terra announcement, in brackets, Soma Labs. Terra is T-E-R-R-A. And it's one of the weirder videos that I've seen for announcing a synthesizer. Yeah, so it's a wooden shape with some metal contacts in true Soma Labs style. It is microtonal, and it's polyphonic, and it's a synthesizer, and it goes from that kind of sound into some pretty weird, noisy stuff. And in typical Soma fashion, it's a bit hippie and strange. Are you ready for this? These two phrases. Terror is our dream about a bright future, where we will be both technologically advanced and more connected to nature. Fair enough. Why is it a synthesizer? I don't know. And the second phrase, where machines and technology are not a prison for our feelings and spirit, but their extension. Wow. Okay, sure, bro. Yeah, it's a digital machine with 32 complex synthesis algorithms, and apparently each one will turn it into a completely new and flexible musical instrument. And I'm just very confused. The housing is just solid wood because you can. It looks like they've just taken a slice out of a whole tree and put a synth in it.
Are they taking the proverbial?
No, I think they're just that weird.
The trouble is, no one is going to be able to get hold of one, as we said quite a few shows ago.
Yeah.
Because of the situation in Ukraine.
We'll see how that goes. But we're wrapped up. It's time, of course, for our final segmentio, the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. And I don't have one. And I know what yours is, Pete, and I'm excited as well. But Pete, what is yours for this week?
This week, it is not a YouTube channel.
You feeling all right?
Yeah. I'm fine. It just isn't.
Amazing.
Right. My multimedia recommendation for this week is, wait for it. It is the third series of Love, Death Plus Robots on Netflix, which starts next week on the 20th of May.
The hype train is real. I loved the previous two seasons. Yep. I can't contain all the strange noises. It's going to be so good.
So anyone that hasn't seen the first two series and they've got access to Netflix, I would recommend that they get themselves along there. I personally think they are phenomenally good. Well, there's normally about 8 episodes.
Something like that. Let's have a quick gander. So, Love, Death and Robots. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in Volume 2. I feel like, yeah, so there was more in Volume 1, I think. Yes, 18 in Volume 1.
Good grief.
And 8 in Volume 2. I'm hoping for closer to 18 this time, please.
I think it's 8.
No.
Well, I think the first one was very experimental.
Definitely.
And subsequently, they know, obviously, they can see the viewing figures for each one. And because they're all completely different styles of animation.
Yeah, different studios.
Different types of story, all tending to lean towards the fantasy or sci-fi. And consequently, they've sort of gone with the most popular studios, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think there's one particular studio, I can't remember who they are, but they did Beyond the Aquila Rift and Snow in the Desert, which were probably the most hyper-real, unbelievably detailed. You're kind of not sure if it's reality or not. And weirdly, not even, I think they'd got over to the other side of the Uncanny Valley, where you could tell if it was a little bit worse, it would be kind of creepy and weird, but they were so close, it wasn't actually that unnatural anymore.
Yeah, that Snow in the Desert one was particularly good.
It was really great. I do like some of the more stylized ones as well. Some of those had some great stories.
Some of the manga-looking ones, or the ones that are a bit more Pixar in some respects.
Totally. There was one, I think it's called Ice, which had a great visual style, which is kind of graphic novel-ish. And of course, the ones which were really cartoony, like the one with the yogurt. That was fun.
Yeah.
Did like that. Anyway, oh, that's going to be so good. I can't wait.
Yes, I am very much looking forward to it. And I like the way they release all of them simultaneously so that you can just binge out.
Yep, that'll be the plan. Meet up with James, binge the whole thing, have pizza. It'll be brilliant. One thing that you did remind me of is that there is a Love, Death and Robots art book that isn't quite available yet, but I'm just on the WH Smith website. How English of me. But there's a pre-order for it, 26th of July 2022. That's supposed to be available.
That would make a nice Christmas present for someone.
Indeed. I've got my eyes firmly on that, and also the Never Too Small book. I really want to get that. Right. My miscellaneous monthly, multi-weekly, mediary, whatever it's called, I've totally forgotten. Jam by Corey Wong and Chromeo, that's J-A-M, in brackets, just a minute. Corey Wong is a funk guitarist from Corey Wong fame, his own name, and Vulfpeck and other such things, and he makes a lot of great musical YouTube-y stuff. And this was a really good jam. have a listen. If you like your kind of funky, synthy, slightly 80s-ish stuff. But that was a really cool collaboration. Corey Wong and Chromeo, Just a Minute. And as always, thank you so much for tuning in to Rack Addicts After Hours. We'll catch you in the next one. Farewell.